Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to our second hour of Catholic Answers Live. Does chastity have to do just with our bodies, or is there more to it? Our topic this hour on Catholic Answers Live is emotional virtue. Is it possible that we might be physically chaste and yet we use other people emotionally or in relationships? Certainly Jesus called us to be chaste not just in body but also in our inner lives. But how does one do that? How does one develop virtue on the level of the emotions, on the level of relationships? I am Cy Kellett, your host. We will take your calls at 888-318-7884. And our guest this hour is Sarah Swafford. Sarah is the founder of Emotional Virtue Ministries. She speaks internationally on topics such as emotional virtue, dating and relationships, modesty of intentions, and interior confidence. She's the author of Emotional Virtue, A Guide to Drama-Free Relationships. Sarah Swafford, thank you very much for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Thanks for having me. I'm a little jealous, though. You said San Diego. I mean, I'm from Kansas, and I love Kansas, but having been to San Diego, I have to say God knew what he was doing over there for sure. So
I feel that way, but I suppose he probably knew what he was doing when he put you in Kansas, too. You just don't like the weather.
I do love it. I do. I love it. I actually live here right next to Benedictine College. Go Ravens. So I am blessed with the most amazing community, I would say, in the country. So we are blessed. We don't get the beautiful weather like you do, but we have beautiful people. So it works out. Very blessed.
Yeah, and all the people are horrible here. So that's not really true.
Traffic.
So, Sarah, if I go to your website, emotionalvirtue.com, I think that's right, or read the book Emotional Virtue, what is it that you want me to have from that?
I love it because it's like the million-dollar question that takes only 6 hours to cover. I'm just teasing. So basically, I wrote my book a couple years ago. To be honest, I was doing a lot of ministry at Benedictine, and I actually was a residence hall director. So I lived with my husband. I have four little kids, and at the time, I had two little boys under two. And I was actually a residence hall director, so I lived in a dorm with 142 freshman college women. So for 3 years, I lived in this dorm, and at the same time that I was doing ministry and stuff, was the same time that Facebook came out and texting really picked up speed. And I'm old, so I'm 33, and so I missed social media. I got through dating and relationships and got engaged and got married before I knew what social media was or what texting was. So I was looking at this whole aspect of relationships going down, between the men and women on campus. And I was like, wow, this whole social media and texting thing is going to change relationships forever. And so as I was watching that kind of happen, I started just noticing how easy it is to understand like the chastity message and how, you're like, oh, okay, so just don't have sex and everybody's good and blah, 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 blah. And then I had so many women and men come to me and just say like, man, Sarah, I'm not sleeping around, but I am a mess just emotionally. And, I'm texting like seven different guys trying to like feel my worth through, these little relationships. And yeah. I had a lot of guys who would tell me, I have seven or eight girls that, I'm kind of talking to. I call it the gray area in my book. We're just texting, we're just talking, we're just hanging out, whatever, that kind of definition of that is. And so to be honest, my book really came out of my whole ministry just came out of seeing this need of, man, this whole emotional side, of relationships, it doesn't get talked about as much. St. Thomas Aquinas, all of his beautiful work on virtue, it's always like, okay, emotional virtue is more just a play on words. It's just saying, gosh, like how do we take, that all those passions and emotions and feelings that go into relationships? And I always, I always joke, I'm a big Dave Ramsey fan, and he always says, if you don't control your money, it'll control you. And so I was, same with planning and time management. If you don't control your time, if you don't dictate to your time where you want it to go, it'll control you. And so in using that mentality with your emotions, if you just to one of two things, you can either stuff every emotion you have and you just don't want to feel anymore, or you can let your emotions run wild and they completely control your life. and or your social media life or your real life or, you know, whatever. So, you know, we're human beings, we work in extremes. And so the question is, how do we apply virtue not only to social media, not only to texting, not only to our relationships, but also how do we work through that hard, difficult, emotional, passionate side of our human being and really tackle relationships. So
when you talk about all that social media stuff, do you like, could you give us some concrete idea of how have dating changed? Like I'm you say you're 33 year old. Well, I'm really old. And there used to be a thing called like dating. Like you would pick up a phone and call someone, and I don't know truly if that even exists anymore. So what has changed? Maybe you could explain it to us. And then what does that mean for the emotional lives of young people, young adults?
Right. Well, I do a lot of my work with junior high, high school, college, young adult, you know, Theology on Tap. That's kind of where it all kind of, that's where a lot of people I get to interact with are at. But I also do a lot with parents. And it's been really interesting to see the evolution of social media. So when I first started doing my ministry, you know, years ago, Facebook was kind of the only thing. And texting, you know, was starting to be smartphones. It was a little easier to text. So when it kind of got into this whole element of, you know, I used to laugh when I first started doing ministry. A lot of times the parents would come to me and say, oh my goodness, like my kids are on their phones all the time. I can't get them to like look me in the eye. I can't get them to pay attention to me and to be a part of our family. They're just kind of glued to their phones. And then over the last like 2 or 3 years, I have had just a ton of teens and young adults come to me and say, my parents are on their phones all the time. Oh, like they don't pay attention to me. They don't talk to me. They don't see me. And it was almost like a reverse, you know? And so I think what happened was, is for a long time, it was like the young adults and teens were on their phones. It was kind of the hip thing to do, to be on, you know, all these outlets. And I think the parents sat around their living room and were like, hello, like, I want to hang out. Let's do something together. And then when they finally just got bored of waiting, you know, for everyone to show up, I think they just decided, well, if you're on Facebook, I'm just going to see what this is like. And so now we have a whole culture of adults and of teens. So, you know, hanging out with your family, you know, unfortunately, has kind of become like whatever's on TV or on Netflix. And then everyone's just kind of sitting around on their phones. And like, you know, a lot of teens will tell me they'll Snapchat their parents in their house, you know, like, hey, mom, I'm going to be late for dinner, you know? So, I mean, it's not, it's just completely changed the way that we interact. And so I love doing dating and relationships. I love that kind of the aspect of how do you go from hey to I do in our culture? How do you, you know, how do guys always come to me? How do you pursue a woman in the 21st century if Tinder's not your thing or if you're not going to do it all on social media? I mean, there's definitely a component to social media dating and that's going to be there. But oh my goodness, like what do we do? And so for me, it really isn't just dating and relationships. It's taking a step back and looking at every relationship that we have, you know, our relationship with our families, women with other women, men with other men, and then obviously with the opposite sex. And so social media has really, I think it has a place. It does some beautiful things and the Lord does some beautiful things with it. But I think we would be crazy to say that there's not some things that we need to be cautious of or aware of or just, you know, have our thumb on the pulse of what is this really doing for me and being aware of how much of it and how, you know, how much you can handle. So I'm really big on, you know, what can we do to help this face-to-face contact and how, you know, conflict resolution, what does that look like with a generation, you know, of people who really don't do a lot of face-to-face contact. And so then you take that into your marriage or you take that into, you know, I was recently talking to a guy at in an airport. We were just chatting before our flight and he said, you know, I'm 27, you know, I've been married for 5 years. And we have a little baby and my entire divorce went down over text messaging because we didn't feel comfortable enough talking to each other in person. And I was blown away because, you know, again, that's, you know, the generation, I'm 33, this is kind of 27, you know, that's not the generation that's, you know, the 13 to 18 year olds right now. So what is that going to look like for them coming through high school and college? And what are we doing to help everyone to set them up to succeed in relationships, in all relationships, not just dating, because these marriages are going to have to figure out how to have that face-to-face contact and really to have good conflict resolution and just the richness of life together and life in community and what they're missing out on by, you know, just being on their phone. Phones are great. They have a place. We all have one.
Right.
I'm not a hater, but we have to figure out how to apply virtue to that. that's really where this is at.
So if a parent or maybe you are listening and you are a parent of a young person and you want to know, well, what does the church offer, for example? What does – you mentioned Thomas Aquinas, Sarah. What offer us in, sure, in ways of understanding how to bring our humanity out even in a situation where it's a texting world? And
yes,
it is there. Even there's a way to be human with one another and a way to be inhuman with one another, whether it's in regard to physical chastity or whether it's in regard to this online kind of or maybe not even online, but connected kind of world. Is that about
totally
right?
Oh, yeah. So we are so, you know, I'm going to use the word spoiled because our church is so rich and we have so many giants. You know, I said St. Thomas Aquinas. My eldest son is named Thomas. My second child is named Fulton for Archbishop Fulton Sheen. And, you know, one of his favorite, you know, sayings was we have to learn how to love people and use things and not use people and love things. And I think that, you know, just thinking about myself growing up in high school and throughout college, you know, I really did see love as an emotion. I mean, it was very much like, you know, I either feel in love or I want to fall into this like, you know, fluffy pit of clouds that is love and be enveloped by it. And it's very much all about me and what can I do to play this part and to feel this rush. And, you know, I just look back on that and I don't know where all that comes from, but it's definitely in our society of just like, love is about how you can take to get to feel
better,
worthy and
yep,
filled up. Yeah, very much so much, very much like that. So then whenever we have the giants of our church, I'm going to go with St. John Paul the Great and other giants of our church who just throw us this richness in the beauty of the church. The catechism is full of quotes that are just unbelievably romantic. If you want to, you know, if you want to be honest, you know, about how we can love one another. And, one of my favorites and one of my good friends is, my husband actually studied theology at Mundelein. And, when he was there, one of his professors just happened to be Father Bob, who I think most people know as Bishop Robert Barron. And, he would sit in my living room and I still feel bad that, you know, I fed him chicken casserole that I made, but it's okay. So we would talk about life. And he said this one day about, he like had this blog article. He's like, I think you might like this. And this whole article was about how love is this fantastic quote. And I'm going to paraphrase, but he just says, love is not primarily an emotion or feeling. It may be accompanied by emotion, but that's the confusing thing about our times is that we confuse love with a feeling. And he says, love is actually a great act of the will. It's when I say, I desire your good, not for my sake, but for yours. And it's just straight from the playbook of JP2 and of St. Thomas Aquinas, who just say like, you know, to love is to will the good of another. To love, you know, the way we love our children, the way we love our families, the way we love our friends, it's usually not about us. It's about how can I make you more virtuous? How can I love you more? So I think it's really interesting. You know, I do say that sometimes I look back on my life and I was raised in a fantastic Catholic home and like, I mean, wonderful parents, but you still get this message from the world that's like, you know, be a taker, not a giver. Be, you know, be selfish. Don't be selfless. And if you want to get ahead, you're going to have to play this game. Or if you want to get what you want, you're going to have to play this game. And it really sets people up to fail in relationships. And then you add social media in there. And, you know, I say in my talks, I always have, you know, whoever I'm with say out loud, I will not use you and I will not let you use me. Because what we've lost is that, you know, understanding of what does it mean to use someone. You know, obviously physically you can see that a little bit better with your, you know, own two eyes, but there's also like that element of emotional use that, you know, people can definitely feel. It comes in a whole lot of different varieties, but to be aware of where we may feel insecure or needy or that feeling of needing to be desired or to be noticed and what that does to us as a person and what lengths we will go to fulfill that need. We can't do it at the expense of somebody else.
Are you having trouble finding love in a world that is electronic now, where our relationships are often not personal and don't even involve conversation much anymore? Are you worried about your children in such a world? Need to maybe some help finding the ways to break through to real humanity in a world that's kind of fighting against humanity in many ways. Well, Sarah Swofford is here to help. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Emotional virtue is our topic. If you're looking for love in the online connected world and you need some help thinking about how to find truly human love in that place, you have come to the right place. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.
Call us now with your question. Hello? On Catholic Answers Live.
We hear it every year. The perennial question. What are you giving up for Lent? And there's nothing wrong with doing without certain things you may have an affinity for. But this year, why not turn the question around and ask, what are you taking on for Lent? Have you considered helping a friend or family member as they journey into the Catholic Church? It's called Friendship Evangelization. And so you don't have to go it alone. Author Devin Rose has written Navigating the Tiber, How to Help Your Friends and Family Journey Toward the Catholic Faith. Not only does he equip you with the knowledge from Scripture, the early Church, and Christian history, he shows you how to deal with the common aspects of a convert's journey. Make this Lent one to remember. Order your copy of Navigating the Tiber today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
It was 100 years ago that our Blessed Mother appeared to three children in Fatima, Portugal, and Catholic Answers Magazine is marking the anniversary with a very special issue. Want to be sure to get your copy? Subscribe right now to the best Catholic apologetics magazine anywhere by calling 888-291-8000 or by going to Catholic.com. Getting Fatima right, exploding the myths of Fatima, and a closer look at our Blessed Mother. Just a few of the articles to look forward to. You don't want to miss this very special issue highlighting this hallmark event in Catholic history. Don't wait another moment to subscribe. Call 888-291-8000 or go to the shop at Catholic.com right now to get subscriptions for yourself and those you love. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
How do we have healthy, happy, fully human relationships in a world that is electronic, in which oftentimes young people don't speak to one another face to face and may carry on, as you were saying, Sarah, 5, 6, 7 relationships, all via text, none of which involve very much FaceTime. Sarah Swofford is our guest. She is the author of Emotional Virtue, A Guide to Drama-Free Relationships, and she's here to help us through those questions. Sarah, I think maybe we're all new at this. I mean, there's nobody who's old hat at this because it hasn't been around that long. It does seem to me, though, already there's a lot of regret. What would you say to someone who says, I want to start over. I got to reboot this thing. I want to, you know, my relationships, that kind of thing. The way I've been doing it via the phone or whatnot isn't working.
Right. Well, I mean, it's such a great question, I think, because I talk when I go to speak, and I usually ask, you know, how many of you have ever been misinterpreted in a text, or how many of you have ever been hurt by a text, or hurt by something that was said about you on social media, or, you know, I mean, like, everyone's hand goes up. And, you know, I always say, even as myself, you know, I'm very much come from a very kind of perfectionistic people pleaser, you know, like, I really feel like, I don't know if there's some people out there that feel that way sometimes, where it's like, you struggle with that. Okay. Am I playing the part? Do I look the part? And oh my gosh, social media, you can just walk away from social media, just, you know, feeling a little bit worthless, or even a little bit, man, I feel like I'm trying so hard to, like, you know, keep it all together. And yet my kitchen is still a mess. You know what I mean? Or just like my life is still a mess. And we can kind of, I love how social media also shows a real side of people. But I think that at any age and at any stage, you know, you can kind of feel sometimes like maybe either you put yourself out there and maybe you feel a little rejection, or maybe you posted something or you said something that you regret, or maybe it's more personal. Like it was a relationship that, you know, I have a lot of women and men that come to me and say, you know, I was in a relationship for 6 months, couldn't really tell where we were at. And I thought we were moving forward towards dating. And yeah. he looked, you know, he or she looked at me and said, you know, oh, we're just friends, you know, and then you're left with 6 months of, oh my gosh, like I thought we were going to get married, you know, like, so I just think that sometimes like it's just very ambiguous sometimes of just where are we? What are we, you know, and then also the level of intimacy that we express sometimes in text messaging, you know, is sometimes maybe a little more intimate or a little bit more past where you are in person. That is something that has come to my attention with the young adults a lot. Mm-hmm. And so when people come to me and say, how do I start over? What do I do? You know, well, the first thing I say is, well, I spent 158 pages trying to figure it out in my book. And so it's very much like building a house on a foundation, you know? So once you see, you know, how the world's idea perfect and the emoticoaster, what I call the emoticoaster, which is, you know, just like you start, you know, looking at your life only through social media or through, you know, like just texting or, you know, all these little things that are just maybe not always in reality. Like sometimes it's a little bit in your mind or in, you know, in the future, in your fantasy. And then you talk about the cycle of use, you know, you talk about how many, you know, how I've used others either emotionally or physically or been used. There's a lot of wounds there. And yep. so, you know, you place this foundation in my book. I spend the whole first part of my book just talking about what seems to be attacking us, whether we are aware of it or not. And then also spending that next part of the book, which is, okay, if we're going to answer this with virtue, you know, when I was in high school, I knew patience was a virtue and that was about it. You know, I was like, yay. And that's all I got, you know? So to really look at our lives and look at the virtues, you know, look at temperance, look at courage, you know, look at all the things that we need to be a fully alive human being, like our Lord wants us to be, and asking the Holy Spirit to come and heal those parts of our lives, especially if we've been hurt, you know, by the opposite sex or by a group of mean girls, you know, at school or even as an adult, you know, being maybe pushed down and knocked around verbally by some people in our family or friends or coworkers, you know, to really look at our lives and to say, where do I want to heal from these things? And so, you know, I talk a lot in my book about my conversion story and just how I really had to take a box. I built a box and I put everything in it, all my insecurities, all my anxieties, all my past mistakes. And I dropped it off at the feet of our Lord in the confessional when I was 20 years old in college. And that was my experience for the first time of just the love of the Lord and the forgiveness that I, you know, and really the being filled up with something, not just dropping something off, but really being filled up with something. And I always tell people, it's not that, you know, I look at that 20-year-old girl and I look at myself at 33 and it's not that, you know, I don't struggle anymore. It's not that I have it all figured out. I'm so far from it. But the thing, the difference is between her and me now is I surrendered to the Lord and I laid that down at his feet. And every morning I wake up and I surrender again because I can't do it without him. And so it's really good. It's a process, man. I mean, that's what I kind of, you know, if anyone's listening out there and says, I just want to hit a reset button, like hit it, maybe go to confession. But at the same time, like it's going to be a work in progress because we are works in progress. And the Lord knows that.
All right. Let's go to calls. Christine in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on KHOJ Covenant Network. You are on with Sarah Swofford.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you.
Sarah, I wanted to ask you a question to get input as a parent. I have a son that's in Catholic grade school. He's in fourth grade. And I went to a mom's night out a couple weeks ago, and I found out that, now my son doesn't do this, but a lot of the other kids in the class, they have cell phones and they are texting one another like out of school hours and things like that. And it's not just in the fourth grade, it's in the upper grades too, because I talked to some teachers about this. And that the kids text each other all the time. And a lot of times it's not nice things that they say about one another. And these are small classes. It's just, you know, like 20 kids per class, per grade. Mm-hmm. And there's all this stuff going on. And the tone that I got from the parents and the teacher was that it's like nobody knows, none of the adults know what to do. Mm-hmm. Except if something is really wrong, then they'll say, you know, that's inappropriate, you know, don't do this again, or I'm going to, you know, call your parents.
Sarah, we're going to have to wait to get to Christine's question until after the break. I think it is very much the case that parents don't know what to do. We weren't raised with this stuff. We're not sure exactly how to approach it. More with Sarah Swofford when we come back in just a moment on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What did the Pharisees, pagan emperors, the Nazis, and the Quran all have in common? All were enemies of the faith, who admitted crucial facts that undermined their own position. In his new book, Hostile Witnesses, How the Historic Enemies of the Church Prove Christianity, author Gary Machuda looks at dozens of Christianity's most notorious foes, from biblical times through the 20th century, and draws from their words and deeds surprising testimony to gospel truths. Rich in research and written with clarity and force, Hostile Witnesses is a unique contribution to Catholic apologetics, one that speaks with special urgency to a modern world in which the faith is once again under attack. If you love apologetics, you need to order your copy of Hostile Witnesses today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore in your area.
A new study reveals the happiest couples know how to bring out the best in each other. Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck will discuss the study tomorrow on More to Life on EWTN Radio. Does your spouse bring out the best or worst in you? Tune in tomorrow to More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. And coming up right after Catholic Answers Live today is EWTN Live. Father Nathan Cromley will discuss discovering Patrick, the saint of Ireland, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How do I know what's healthy in these online on-text relationships? What's holy? What's fully human? How do I know if I'm a parent and I'm worried about my kids? How do I know if I'm a kid? Or maybe I'm a young adult. It's hard to know. We're all new at this, and Sarah Swofford is here to help us with that. 888-318-7884 is the number. Sarah's book, Emotional Virtue, A Guide to Drama-Free Relationships. And Sarah, before we went to the break, Christine had asked you about her son in the fourth grade and what's appropriate at that level, essentially. Or is that what you heard?
Yeah, that was a great question. And to be honest, I've been doing my ministry for about 7, 8 years. And I have just seen the age of them, of people getting phones, just get lower and lower. At first it was very much like a high school thing. It was very much a junior high thing. And now we're definitely seeing the average age of a student getting their phone, or a child getting their phone, is really becoming about 8 or 9, which is 8, 9, 10. And so I want to clarify this with Christine and everyone out there listening. I don't for a minute pretend to be an expert on this, because my kids are 11, 9, 5, and almost 2. So I always just kind of come at this as, man, if you have a teenager out there, or if you have a young, an elementary school student, or even a junior high student, like, I would love to sit at your feet for 3 hours and listen to what you have to say about it, because I'm on the brink of all of this as well. And so, but I also have the ear of high school and college students and young adults. And one of my favorite things to ask them is, so what did your parents do right, and what do you wish they would have done differently? And that's just really good for me, because they just came out of this and they're able to kind of reflect on it and say, okay, this is what I wish we would have had, and this is what, And one of the things that I have been seeing that has been so interesting is to have young adults come to me and talk about their phone, and a lot of them talk about their addiction to their phone, where, they're like, addiction meaning I can't imagine my life without it and I'm on it all the time. And one of the things that I've been seeing is a lot of them are talking about the fact that there's no accountability. There's no accountability when they're in their room with their phone alone. So whether you're talking about, it's very hard, I think, for, to hand a phone to like an 11 or 12 or 13 year old boy with like full data capabilities. He can jump online on the internet. He can talk to anybody he wants to anywhere in the world, or he can text the people in his classes. You know, like, that's just a lot of, to be totally honest, that's a lot of responsibility that child has on his shoulders to make the right decision. And to always, you know, it's just so easy. The devil knows exactly how to mess with us. And, you know, it's so easy. So when you start talking about high schoolers, or you start talking about junior high students, or in Christine's case, you know, fourth grade, what I'm seeing a lot of is, unfortunately, bullying. It's a lot that younger, you know, elementary, junior high, what they do is it's really become kind of a cyber thing, you know, a cyber bullying thing. Like she said, you know, they're not always saying the nicest things about people or about each other. We talked a little earlier about conflict resolution. You know, like, if you're upset with someone, you know, back 50 years ago, you approached them and you talked about it, or, you know, at the, you know, whatever, however that went down. But now you can just send a nasty text message to 18 other people, or you can post something online. And, or if you want to hurt someone's reputation in high school, you can make up things, you can say things, you can post videos of something that happened that was, maybe not something someone else wanted to see or have out there about themselves. You know, you start, it's just so multifaceted. And so, you know, I think talking to Christine, you know, as a mother as well with boys the same age, I think that the question I think we have to ask is, how do we help them grow in virtue, whether they have a phone or not? And especially with, you know, I think a lot of parents want their kids to have phones so that they can, you know, hey, it's after soccer practice, I need picked up. You know, like, hey, it's, you know, I need to go, I'm at school, things got out early, can you come get me? It's a lot easier to text them. It's, you know, high school, junior high, elementary, it's easier to send a text message. And I totally get that. I think the question we have to just ask ourselves is, you know, how do we set them up to succeed, right? So if I need to get a hold of you, I mean, is there ways I can get a hold of you without you having to have a phone full of data where you can jump on and look at things? You know, some parents, you know, have talked a lot about their, you know, their kids have a phone, but their phone is very much like kind of one that you would see at the AT&T store at the very end of the counter that just flips up and only has numbers, and it doesn't have, you know, any capabilities to do any internet, or it might even not have texting. But your son or daughter can pick up the phone and call you and say, hi, like, come get me, you know. So it's just a lot. You know, the other thing I love, and I hope this helps, this really helped me, especially during Lent, a lot of people have asked, how do I hold myself accountable to the time I spend on my phone at any age? But this mom approached me one time after a talk, and her advice was genius. She had kids that were all ages, and she actually built what she called the Nest. And it was this little, like, honest to God, it was a little, like, cage, like a little bird cage that she had right by the garage door in her kitchen. And she had a power strip, and it had all of the phone cords charging. And basically, when you walked through the door, you plugged your phone into the Nest. You put it to bed in the Nest. And she basically said there was no rules. It wasn't like you couldn't use your phone. Basically, what it was is you plugged your phone in, and you're at home. It's family time. You don't get to take your phone to your bedroom with you. You don't get to take your phone throughout the house, because when it's plugged in the Nest, she could see, yeah, if you want to take a call, or if you want to call your friend, totally, go call them. Or if you want to answer a text message, go ahead, that's fine. But she could see in her kitchen how long you were standing there, who you were talking to, what was going on. There was accountability there, right? She knew what you were up to. And what she said was it really helped her, because, you know, another dad I talked to said he had 8 kids. The first 4 went through with the phone on the wall in the kitchen, and the other 4 went through with cell phones. And he said, you know, with those first 4, he's like, I knew when they, you know, when they, especially when they were like high school, you know, I knew what was going on. I knew who was talking to who. I knew who was interested in who. I knew who was dating who. I knew how it was going. I knew when they broke up. I knew, you know, like, I knew everything without having to be on the phone, but there was accountability there. And I knew how long you've been on the phone. I knew everything, right? And he said when the next 4, his next set went through with cell phones, he's like, I didn't know who was talking to who. I didn't know who was dating who. I didn't know what, I knew when they broke up, but I just saw, like, the effects of it. I didn't know what happened. So I really learned a lot from that dad, you know, and just, like, what's kind of the changing and how we approach this. And I think just anything that you can do to help bring about conversation about how much is good for you. I have another mom that sets a timer. She has a little egg timer. And she sets it for 30 minutes at night, and everyone gets 30 minutes on their phone to do their social media, to do their texting, to do their thing. And then the phones go back into the nest. And, you know, that's just their way of being more available to their family and being more, so to Christine's question on what do you do with everybody else has a phone and everyone else is doing it, I think you just really have to evaluate for your own family just what level of participation do you want to have in that? And then also what's healthy for your age group child of either how much or what does the phone, what is the phone able to do, the capabilities, so that there's some accountability there at any age. You know, I know a lot of parents who have told me they set timers on their phone because they feel like they are on it too much and they want to spend more time with their kids, you know? And so it's fabulous. It's really, it's, and also, you know, things like Covenant Eyes, I just want to throw out to my friend Matt Frad and, you know, there's the amazing work that that Chassis Project, who I work for, we're trying to do with pornography and just really trying to call out, you know, call a spade and just really say like, this is, you know, this is affecting everyone, men, women, children, young adults. It is just so in your face and it's so everywhere on social media and on your phone. Even checking the news is like scary sometimes, you know? So I just think we really need to, you know, to hold each other accountable and to really be honest with each other about what's going on in our teens' lives and our young adults' lives and our kids' lives. But we need to look in the mirror and look at our own lives too and really see like how much and what is affecting me and how is it affecting my worth as a person? You know, just all those things. I know that's a long answer, but that's probably my best shot at it.
So. Well, thank you, Christine, for that question. 888-318-7884 is the number. Sarah Swafford is our guest. And Sarah, Rick in Sacramento called, could not stay on the line, and asked if we would just ask you this question. Can you discuss the proper place for physical and emotional attraction in our relationships? And he gave an example of maybe you meet someone who seems like a good person to marry, but you don't feel attracted to that person.
Ooh, good question. Loaded question. Again, I'm so glad I have 6 hours to answer all of these questions. That was a joke. So basically that's deep because he said emotional and physical attraction. And what happens if you maybe feel more of one and not the other, or more of the other and not, you know, that
right.
happens.
Right.
My very short answer, which I spent over 60 pages in my book answering what I call the natural progression of a relationship. So how do you go from hey to I do in a social media texting world? So it took me a long time and a lot of prayer to try to figure that out. And so I basically took the book and I kind of built it on stones, you know, like baby steps, you know? And so one of the things that I just find in relationships is, to be honest, the best relationships really start in a really solid friend group. And I know that sounds cliche and, you know, whatever, but there is that aspect of, okay, so I'm going to do this quick, but you know, women out there, you've got to find that squad, that tribe, that group of women that you can run with and you run to the Lord with and have that good group of women, right? At any age. And then the men out there, hopefully you men out there that are listening, like you've got to find some brothers in Christ that you can run with. You know, you have a squad, you have a tribe, you have a group of men that you rely on that can hold you accountable, that can, you know, to show you the way to run with. Because when things get hard and things get tough and relationships get messy and the opposite sex gets confusing, you need someone that you can run to. And I want you to run first to our Lord. But then I also want you to run with a group of like-minded people, you know, that are the same sex as you, because what happens is especially in high school and college, is you hit a rough patch or you hit, you know, life gets tough and life gets messy, and it will, and it does. It is so tempting and it is so easy to run into the arms of the opposite sex and to think that that's going to be okay and bypass friendship whatsoever, right? So, you know, you talk about how emotionally involved, how physically involved do I get? If your starting point A is in these groups of true friends, and then the trick is to not only have these group of like the same sex, like for the females, you know, the women they run with the males they run with, but for those two groups to spend time together in person, hanging out, cosmic bowling, IHOP, you know, going to dinner, doing fun, going to ice cream, like doing fun things that you can do, throwing the alternative party, you know, like you don't have to compromise your morals to have a good time, right? Like everyone wants to get dressed up and go out and have a good time. Right? That's awesome in a group of men and women. And then what happens is you naturally, the natural progression of a relationship, those groups naturally start, someone starts standing out in the crowd, right? It's not a flirt fest where you just try to figure out who you're going to date in the male group Brothers in Christ field, right? But really just authentically, you already gave up using people because we know that that's not what's good for, you know, emotionally or physically. So all of a sudden your relationships become about, how can I get my brothers in Christ to heaven? How can I help them in virtue and not be an obstacle that stands in their way? How can I authentically love them and be there for them as they try to figure out what God's calling them to do? That, I mean, as a woman, you know, and then for the men to look after the women and say, man, I want to really, like, I love Susie and Sally like they're my sisters. Like, I want to be there for them. I want to protect them and respect them as women. And you start learning virtue through relationships. And so it's a natural progression of a relationship, right? So not only do those friendships hold checks and balances for you because your whole friend group is watching it all go down, but you also have this beautiful kind of natural progression to the next stage. So that's where texting gets really kind of messy because you might meet someone at a function or at a bar or out or something like that. And you're like, oh, like, I think I'm going to text them and see if there's potential here. So all of a sudden you just start texting this person that your friends haven't met. They don't know who this person is. And you start texting for like 6 months, just all this really revealing things about yourself. Maybe you meet up in person, maybe you don't, but you have this like really intense, intimate relationship with this person. And there's no accountability there, right? There's no, what, how does he act around my girlfriends? How does he act around my guy friends? So I guess my very long, short answer is, I know that it's hard and tempting to want to jump into a relationship with someone and just be like, okay, how do I figure out how emotional and physical can I be? But I think the very first step is to take the time, and I know it's hard, it's very difficult, but take the time to really build up those friend groups and make those really strong so that when you do go to that next step, you have all kinds of people that are there cheering you on, helping you out. And my last thing is, you know, God, time, trust, virtue, honesty. In my book, those are the 5 steps for moving forward in a relationship. And in my book, I actually break all of those down and how, you know, to go from one step to the next, whether you're going from true friends to having a DTR, to defining the relationship, stating your intentions in person, to dating, you know, to courting, to engagement, to marriage. And I spent a lot of time and a lot of prayer really breaking that down because there really isn't a lot of dating books out there. There really isn't a lot of how do we go about this? You know, there's a lot of great books out there in the secular world, but their advice isn't all that awesome sometimes. And so I really took, you know, what I always kind of say, you know, Jason and Kristalina Everett are really good friends of mine. We all work together at the Chastity Project, and we really are trying to approach this at a lot of angles. And for me, what I felt like my piece of the puzzle was that whole relationship side. And how do we cultivate just fantastic, virtuous, excellent, holy, striving, because no one's perfect, striving relationships that really center on being vulnerable and being sincere and being clear with our intentions.
Okay.
And Sarah, that's kind of a long answer. Yeah, sounds great.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back with more with Sarah Swafford on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Bishop James Wall from the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about the most exciting and innovative Catholic book in years. In today's world, people from countless perspectives pose challenges to our Catholic faith every day, in conversations, through the mass media, on the internet, and more on the infinite collection of social media platforms. There's no getting away from this daily onslaught. We as Catholics need to stand strong, to be prepared, to mount a daily defense, to respond to the many challenges that we, as believers, are presented with every day. To that end, my good friend and apologist extraordinaire Jimmy Akin has come up with what will surely be a great resource for years to come, a daily defense. A daily defense takes up a different challenge for every day of the year, 366 in all, teaching you how you can defend the faith and give answers to Catholics and skeptics alike. And it's user-friendly, with challenges and answers indexed alphabetically by scripture verses or by topic, so finding the answers can be quick and easy. Order your copy of A Daily Defense today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Cerfa. In Matthew 20:17, Jesus took the 12 with him to Jerusalem. On the way, he spoke of his passion. Not long after, the mother of James and John asked that her sons sit one at his left and the other at his right in his kingdom. His reaction was to tell her that she didn't know what she was asking. Besides, being his follower meant seeking the good of others over oneself. He himself came to serve and not to be served. Can you imagine what would happen to Madison Avenue if people began operating this way? At first, it might seem that the country would go bankrupt. But actually, everyone would benefit because each person would be looking out for his neighbor. The whole advertising industry would have to reverse itself and appeal to everyone's generosity. This is what God has in mind for us, you and me. It's what He designed us for. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. If you'd like to know more or get more information on what Sarah Swafford is here talking about today, that is healthy, happy, whole relationships, virtuous relationships in a world that has become often more virtual than real. Emotional Virtue is her book, A Guide to Drama-Free Relationships. Emotional Virtue, A Guide to Drama-Free Relationships. And you can get all that. You can get that and all kinds of information about Sarah at emotionalvirtue.com. Sarah, we go now to Katie in Santa Monica, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. Katie, you are on with Sarah Swafford.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Katie.
Hello, Sarah. I have a couple comments to what you've been saying. I'm really interested because I have a 17-year-old, and he's been inundated ever since he was little with computers and cell phones, and I'm a single mom, so... And I wanted him to go to a Catholic school, especially when he was young. And it usually Catholic schools, I hate to say it, aren't in the best areas sometimes I should say. So my thing was I have to give him a phone. And back then it was a flip phone. But as he grew older, I couldn't like take it away from him when the technology got, you know, data and all these internet access. And he actually, through the years, I tried as much as possible to control it, but it is one of the toughest things, especially when when we moved. I being a single mom, I was laid off. We had to move a lot, and he made new friends. And we moved to a kind of a richer area. And even when I took the electronic devices away, like Xbox, because you can get on internet with Xbox and see bad things, and through the internet and watch so many things. His friends would give him just another Xbox because the other parents weren't monitoring it. So it's like you have to make your whole circle, unless you're really it, which my brothers and sisters happen to do, is keep their circle small and keep, you know, kind of the people with the same belief systems all around them. It is one of the toughest things because your kid's going to go to another friend and they're going to show him something that is inappropriate. So what I've tried to do immensely is guard him with knowledge. And even if he does look at these things, I had a chalkboard at one point, and his friend came home and said, "Oh, my aunt wants me to read 50 Shades of Grey." And I'm like, "What are you talking about? You're in high school. Why would you even want to read that as a boy?" And so I wrote, how 50 Shades of Grey is a misuse of God's beautiful gift on the chalkboard at home. And his friend came and saw it. And I probably embarrassed the heck out of my kid, but he needs to be armed with knowledge. And I think that's the main thing about our faith. My son struggles with his faith, and I know he's a great kid, and I know he believes in God. It's just who knows when it's going to actually take root, you know,
Sarah,
and grow.
How do you respond to that, idea of preparing children with – I mean, it really is – I think Katie's exactly right. The proliferation of screens everywhere and access everywhere is very difficult for parents. So how do you respond to that?
Well, and that's the hardest thing, like exactly what Katie's saying is – you might have a really good grasp on everything that's going on or as many things as we can as parents with our own kids, but we just definitely don't have any control over what other parents are doing for their kids. And, you know, especially like she said, you know, at friend groups at school, you know, you don't get to pick your kids' friends at school. That's something that, you know, it's just who they're running with, you know? And so I think that it's really hard because I always want people to hear, you know, especially people that are listening, you know, we live in a social media texting world, and Snapchat, that's a whole nother show, right? Like another show for Snapchat by itself. We're living in this world that, our phones are a part of us. They are not going away. And even as adults, we know that social media, a lot of my college students, they're all on, Instagram, Facebook, almost even for almost for professional reasons. That's where they're getting interviews for jobs and things like that. So I think we have to be real in the fact that we know we need to prepare our kids for quote unquote the real world. And what does that mean? That is a huge question and a huge bubble, for what we're preparing them for. And so I think that, a lot of parents will say, well, I want to make sure that they have a phone in junior high or high school because they're going to eventually go to college and they're going to have all this access to it, And I think that while that's true, I think we have to just remember when you sit down and talk to a 12-year-old boy or a 13-year-old girl, you have to really get a feel for their maturity level and what they can handle and because in the end, I get a very interesting vantage point because as a speaker, I come into a high school of 1,200 students. I give my talk, and for weeks I get emails from students that they open up, they bare their heart to me because I'm not their mom, I'm not their dad, I'm not their youth minister, and they never have to see me again. And there's a lot of freedom in that, right? Because they're like, well, she gets it, she understands what I'm going through because of her talk. She knows where I'm at. And I'm going to tell her everything I'm struggling with because I trust her, but I don't have to live with her. I don't have to see her at youth group every Sunday. Does that make sense? So I have this very interesting vantage point, and the thing that the Holy Spirit seems to breathe into my heart and speak into my heart is we have to set them up so that there's accountability and so that they know that give them what they can handle and not, not set them up to fail. And I think that, sometimes people, your students, your kids might be old enough to be okay with it, to be responsible with it, and it might be fine. But I have to be honest with, my Bible study group of women, when us moms sit around and talk, it's like, we talked about it during the break, like the constant assault of material that is just so, honest to God, you can't even check the news. If you scroll too far down, you're like, my gosh, what did I get into? And movies and music, everything is so sexual and it's so sensual. And so I just can't imagine being a young adult right now. I always tell people, I went through junior high school, college before social media and texting, and I was a hot mess and I didn't even have a phone, I can't even imagine what they're going through. And so I think maybe just because everyone's doing it or everyone has one, maybe that's a conversation that you can have, like the way Katie was having with her son and saying, like, I want what's best for your heart. I want what's best for your head. I want you to know the true, the good, and the beautiful. And I want you to be able to call out what might stand in the way of that. Or in my language, I want to know when I'm being used and I want to know when I'm using someone, either emotionally or physically. I need to be aware of that. And I need to call that out and call a spade a spade. And sometimes phones just get us in a lot of trouble because there's just so much on social media and texting and Snapchat. And it's so much coming at us at all at one time. And it's very difficult, and I pray every day for parents out there fighting the good fight.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're saying protect them as long as you can, because it really is an assault out there. Sarah Swofford, thanks so much for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live. Her book is Emotional Virtue, A Guide to Drama-Free Relationships. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks for having me. God bless you guys.
And thank you to our listeners and for everybody who joined us on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, or Periscope. If you ever want to see the shows, they're also archived there, so you can go back and see them in those locations. We'll see you again tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.